Okay, good morning, everybody. Great to see everyone here today. What I want to do this week, we're going to focus on a number of different things. I figured we'll start this week with something that is quite popular. It's quite famous. But I think, like many things in the Torah, there's so many things that lie beneath the surface, and that with a closer reading, I think we could actually find something even more insightful, even more meaningful than perhaps we are used to. So let's take a look right now. Hi, Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Welcome. Okay, so here we go. So we are told in the Parsha this week, which is another doubleheader, that there's a tremendous amount of cattle that was possessed by Reuven and Gad. And I'm sure, again, we're familiar with this. Although that being said, again, since we're in the middle of these summer months, you know, and it's the end of Bamidbar, rarely is it studied in school, in seminary, or yeshiva. You know, you're lucky if you even, you know, make it to shul to hear the laning, and it's hot, and, you know, double Parsha. So I do feel kind of bad for these Parshas, as I've said over the last couple of weeks. And Matos Masek gets a pretty bad rap. So here we go. Again, so they had tremendous amount of cattle, Reuven and Gad, and they are finding themselves on what's called Iver HaYarden. They are on the east side of the Jordan River. Literally, excuse me, the Jewish people are going to enter the land. They are perhaps just weeks away from entering the land of Israel. And they have a proposal. And they reach and they head over to Moshe and to Elazar, because unfortunately Aaron and Miriam, in fact, and last week's Parsha both passed away. And by last week's Parsha, I mean last week's Parsha that we read, which was really two Parshios because it was a double last week. And their claim is that, listen, where we are situated right now, where we are situated, true. Oh, yes. Someone just messaged me that it is Pinchas. I apologize. Sorry. I want to speak about 2 weeks from now. There's a reason for it. In my head, I'm already planning for 2 weeks from now, but there's a reason why I want to plan for 2 weeks from now. Thank you for that message. In 2 weeks of the Parshas, 2 weeks from now, which is Matos Maaseh, so we're not Pinchas, there's this discussion, and there's a reason why I wanted to deal with this now. You'll see in a minute, and that in when we talk about one of these last narratives in Matos Maaseh, in Bamidbar, the message is a very important one, because here we have a situation where we have tribes that are literally approaching Moshe Rabbeinu. And what are they essentially saying? They're essentially saying, listen, we really like it here. We really like where we are located in the Iver HaYarden. And you know what? We're not so excited to enter the land of Israel. We have a tremendous amount of cattle. Why should we move? Now, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu and you hear people coming to you and saying, I don't want to move to the promised land. I don't want to move to the land of Israel. What would you do? What would you do? Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I would absolutely freak out. Let's think about where we are right now, right? If you begin from Bahaloscha and you look at the, you know, literally almost about to enter the land of Israel, and how that totally falls apart. And then you have the Meraglim. And then you have Korach. And then you have the end of Parshas Chukas, where you have literally the failure of the Jewish people in terms of dealing with the promiscuous zone from Midian. And okay, so I gotta, you know, Pinchas, you don't really have any great tragedy that takes place, right? It's kind of like the war that they're about to engage in. And then all of a sudden, you have people who are coming to you saying that, what? We like it here? You literally, if I was Moshe Rabbeinu, I would wave the white flag. I would say, if I know anything over the last few weeks, literally everything that we have been building up, I want to surrender. So this week is Shavuot Sefer Tammuz. And this week on Thursday, we're going to begin a three-week period of fasting and mourning. And if that is true, if that is correct, then we need to kind of figure out, how did we get to this three-week period? Meaning, what failures, what calamities befell the Jewish people that led to this tragedy? And, you know, when I really think about the 3 weeks, you know, what was the line that someone told me, you know, 3 weeks in the summer, I'll trade you 6 weeks. I'll trade you 6 weeks for the winter. But don't have the 3 weeks fall out in the summer. Okay, maybe this year we're not going to feel it as much. But like, come on. I would, you know, especially the 9 days in Tisha B'Av. First of all, fasting, it's literally the longest fast of the year, right? The days end so late. And, you know, if I really think about the tragedies of Am Yisrael, like, come on, don't, let's not talk about them in July and August. July and August is the time, you know, to celebrate, the summer camps, to have, you know, push them and like put them in November. I don't mind having 6 weeks of mourning our temples. But why does it have to happen in the summer? In the summer, at least now, finally, we can go outside. We get a little bit, you know, maybe it's too hot to go. Can't come in, it's too hot. You know, maybe you can go outside a little bit and enjoy the weather. And just having the 9 days, especially, fall out in the summer where the weather is so beautiful, in many ways, is like adding insult to injury. Just when the weather's nice, sorry. No weddings, no celebrations. So I think there's actually a back end to this story. And I like discussing this, and thank you for pointing that out. I was so focused on this message, I got my my parshios mixed up. But I like focusing specifically on this message a couple of days before the 3 weeks begin. And the reason is because I think there's an underlying message that's hidden here that's very apropos for the 3 weeks. And that's why I decided to highlight this idea today. So let's take a look for a second, okay? Again, imagine if you're the leader of the Jewish people after everything you've gone through, and now you have two tribes that come to you and say, you know, we really like it. We're not interested in kind of entering the land of Israel. And let's take a look, right? That's what they say. They propose this to Moshe Rabbeinu. If we found favor to you, right, we don't want to cross over all Tavruta Yarden. Do you understand what Moshe was probably thinking? Moshe was absolutely freaking out. And look at his language, right? Moshe tells God, he tells Reuven, understand, your brother's going to go to war? And you're just going to stay here? How can you do such a thing? How can you literally back away from the Jewish people? Now, Moshe's response, okay? This is the only part that I want to highlight for now, anyways. What does Moshe say you should do? Who should live there? Give me 1 second. We will come back to the story in 2 weeks. Or next week, whatever. I want to highlight one thing. There it is. But look how, and again, the discussion for now is important, but not what I want to, we'll come back for a little bit. Look at Moshe's answer. Moshe vayiten lehem Moshe livnei Gad, livnei Reuven, and chati shev Menashe ben Yosef. What? All the land that they captured actually in the war that's described really in Parshas, you know, Pinchas continues in Matos Maseh. Excuse me, shev Menashe, where do they come from? Again, the story is about Reuven and Gad. They are asking to stay in the desert. They're asking to stay in Eiver HaYarden. They don't want to enter the land of Israel. Why would Moshe say, oh, yeah, you know what I'm going to do? Can have Menashe also hang out with you here. Menashe doesn't ask for it. We know where the crops are. Why does Moshe also choose half of the Shevet? Half, right? To join Reuven and Gad. It seems to totally come out of left field. Very important question. Maybe you've thought about this before, maybe you haven't thought it before, I have absolutely no idea. But to me, this is a very important question, and I think the answer is very, very profound. And it deals with, I think, an underlying theme, not just in the Torah, although I believe it is replete throughout the Torah, but it is also filled and often found in Tanakh and relevant in the modern world, especially before we enter the 3 weeks. And here we go. Why Shevet Menashe? Why half of Shevet Menashe? So, by the way, I'm happy to, anyone want to propose an answer? Since participation is always so high on Zoom. No, any proposal? Anybody want to? No, nothing? Nobody? Okay, fine. So let's, what happens here? Why can't I get the... What happened to everyone's faces? Why can't I open up your faces? And there, that's what happened. Okay. So, here we go. Let me show you, let me explain to you something which I think is very, very, in my opinion, fascinating. I want to show you the text now. I'm going to share the screen. And here it is. I got a lot of stuff open. Look at this. Okay, take a look at this. Here it is. So, let's read. The Shvatim are coming, but look what they say. So, Moshe reiterates, you want to stay behind? Are you kidding me? You know how bad this is going to be? Look how far we've come. Now you want to stay here? So Moshe literally accuses them of Kita Shavu Macharav V'yasaf Od L'Nicho B'Midbar. You want to turn away from God? And he abandoned them once more in the wilderness? You're going to bring calamity upon all these people. Look at this pasuk. If I read this pasuk, I'm thinking something. What do these words sound like? Where have we seen something like this before? Remaining in the desert, remaining in the desert, not wanting to join their brothers, leaving brothers behind. And look at the word that says here, V'yasaf od. Interesting. That word sounds like the word Yosef. But wait a second. Look how Menashe is identified. Okay, I'll scroll back up again. Menashe, when we hear about Reuven and Gad, we just hear about Reuven and Gad. When we hear about Menashe being added as a Shevet to staying on Transjordan, look how Menashe is identified. Where's Menashe been identified? There you go. Menashe is identified as Ben Yosef. I know Menashe is Ben Yosef. I don't need the Torah to tell me. Furthermore, I think that there's a reminder here of a potential, very dangerous situation. And what is the situation? I think the situation is trying to tell me, is this another Yosef story? Is this another situation where the brothers are leaving behind brothers in the desert, abandoning them? Remember what the brothers did to Yosef? The brothers abandoned him in a pit, in a deserted area, to be sold or to be killed. Eventually, he ended up being sold. right? The brothers are abandoning. They're leaving their brethren behind. They're leaving their brother behind. So too, Reuven and Gad are leaving their brother behind. Now remember, how did Bnei Yisrael get to Mitzrayim? How did the entire Galus, how did the exile, how did all these trials and tribulations begin? It begins with Mechiras Yosef. They sell Yosef. Yosef makes his way down to Mitzrayim, and the brothers go down to Mitzrayim. Remember why we dip, one of the reasons why we dip the karpas? What does Rashi, what do the commentaries say at the Seder night? We dip our karpas in salt water to remind of Mechiras Yosef, of dipping Yosef's garment into blood. The dipping of Yosef's coat into the blood. And remember, the Korban Pesach was about dipping the Agudas Ezov also into blood. There are many similarities between Mechiras Yosef and Pesach and Yetzias Mitzrayim. And of course, the sale of Joseph is the cause of the exile, is the cause of us going down to Egypt and suffering there so much. The exile, the fact that we're even in the desert, the fact that we had all these trials and tribulations, all begin with that moment of Mechiras Yosef, right? On Tisha B'Av, we read the Kina, of course, of Mechiras Yosef. There's no question that if you want to look at Jewish history, if you want to understand almost anything in Tanakh, you look at the most, one of the most pivotal stories. Probably the number one story is the Gan Eden story. Probably the number two story is the sale of Yosef. Those two narratives really explain the underpinnings of so much that happens in Tanakh. And I believe this Reuven and Gad is no exception. If I am Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm hearing words of abandoning my brother, right? Leaving, just like they wanted to leave Yosef in a deserted area, right? And maybe in deep down, Moshe thinks, and Moshe is very concerned. He's panic-stricken that these people, these brethren, also want to leave everyone else behind. But look at the next word that's used in 16. Vayikshu elav. What is, shall we say, what does one brother do by Mechiras Yosef? Vayigash elav Yehuda. Here it says, Vayigshu elav Vayamru. When you hear the word Vayigash, Vayigash means, look at the English, then they stepped up. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Just like Yehuda approaches Yosef, thinking that he's the viceroy of Egypt. And what does he say? Back many, many years earlier, Yehuda got up and said, I'm willing to take responsibility. I'm not willing to have Binyamin be captured. I'm not willing to have Binyamin been left behind. I'm willing to step up and take full responsibility for my actions and for my behaviors. When Moshe hears that these two tribes are also going to do a vayigshu elav, and they speak what they want, and they say, v'nachnu chushim, no, we're going to go, and we're going to, our family will stay here, we're going to go, we're going to fight, we're going to battle, not to worry, we're not going to leave them behind. When Yosef hears the word vayigshu elav, I believe he feels a little calmer, because the lessons of the sale of Yosef was learned. The fail of the sale of Yosef was the failure of people in leadership, was the failure of brothers to step up and to speak up. Yehuda had not an opportunity. Yehuda said, why should we bother kill our brother? Let's sell him, and said to Ishmaelites. If Yehuda would have said, let's not sell him, but let's save him and bring him back to dad, the Midrash says they would have listened to that as well. And Yehuda's failure at that moment to save his brother is, shall we say, atoned for. Or there's a tikkun, there's a rectification, there's a realizing that you make mistakes in life and that you're able to move forward. It was the great Yehuda coming and standing up for Binyamin way back in Parshas Vayigash. And when these two tribes step up and say, we're not going to leave our brothers behind, that, I believe, calms down Moshe a little bit from what he thinks is truly the fragmentation, the fracture, the break, the split, the divide of the Jewish people. But what else can Moshe do? Moshe can also take the great child of Yosef. Ki mashani Elokim beveis avi. The name Menashe comes from the word ki mashani Elokim avi, right? That in many ways Moshe, that's right, Moshe. That Menashe, this idea of, and now I've been abandoned from my father's house and I'm starting my new house. I've been abandoned and now I'm starting my new home. In many ways, Moshe sees Menashe, the tribe of Menashe, as being able to start something anew. A sense of, don't forget, you've been abandoned. Don't abandon. Take Menashe with you. The son of Yosef, the child of that person, Yehuda, the tribe Yehuda abandoned, Menashe will be a reminder. The child of Yosef, the Torah tells us, the son of Yosef, don't look at Menashe. Do not abandon your brothers again. You take the tribe, take half the tribe, some of the tribe, that is this constant reminder of Mechirat Yosef, of the sale of Yosef. And if you take half a tribe, that means that Menashe technically will have half their cousins and their family is going to live on the other side. That will ensure that there's going to be a bond, not just a, okay, I like, you know, Reuven and Gad. Oh yeah, we have like, you know, pen pals. Remember pen pals? Remember pen pals is like a really big thing? Yeah, I don't think pen pals is a thing anymore. Right? Maybe you have Zoom, I don't think you have Zoom pals or FaceTime pals. I don't know if that's a thing anymore, right? Or I guess people just email. I don't know. But I was growing up, we used to have pen pals, right? You know, have a pen pal in like, you know, I don't know, Israel. Have a pen pal in, I don't know, somewhere in the States, right? It's like a thing. Okay? We used to write letters, right? Used to mail letters. Now no one does that anymore. But so I have pen pals. So we got Reuben and Gad. It's not enough to have pen pals in the land of Israel. Have family. Have cousins in the land of Israel. And that's what having the tribe of Menashe accomplished. If I had a picture of the map of Israel, I didn't actually look this up in advance. Let's take a look. Map of Israel by tribes. Let's see if this works. Click. Lulu, it worked. Look at that. Amazing. Division of the promised land to the 12 tribes. Oh, it's not necessarily the website I would have chosen to tell me this, but okay, I didn't read that at the time. But nonetheless, it's an accurate website. So, sorry. Look at where Menashe, right here. Look at Menashe. Look where Menashe spans. It's a straight line on both sides of the border, right? You see that? Isn't that neat? So by splitting up Menashe, it's literally, we have cousins over here. And look where Gad is, right? You'll notice how, okay, Reuven not as much, but you'll notice where do they live in an area where it's a very short distance to cross over. They don't live, right? You live on this side of the Galilee. You're not going to visit your cousins too often. It's too big of a barrier, right? Okay, so my theory doesn't work so well when it comes to Reuven, because I guess half of them is part of the Dead Sea. But nonetheless, you do have these areas that are much, much easier to cross over. Menashe literally has a straight line to see his cousins, right? God literally just a straight line, as you'll see over there. Let's not use this site. Let's use a different site. Okay? We'll use this one. It's the same thing. Okay? Right? But that's the idea behind. And that even though they're going to be split, it's, by the way, that's not a very big split at all. And we know that the Jordan River, unfortunately, it's not a very lush, large geographical body of water. It's quite easy to traverse over without much difficulty, right? In fact, it really turns into a small little river at various points that can drive. It's very easy to hop over. It's not that difficult, okay? So literally, that's this line connected. So these lush, the fertile lands over here that Bnei Yisrael just captured, and interesting, they're not going to live here, and they're not going to live here. Now, the reason why they don't live there is because the land's not really as good. The land is much lusher here. But again, it's literally a straight line to hop into the land of Israel. So in many ways, that's exactly what Moshe wants to avoid. Moshe wants to ensure that it's a little connection. Now, what's this idea before the 3 weeks? I think that means that really the message of the 3 weeks is this notion of Vayigash. What do we do when our brothers, when our friends, when our family are almost being left behind? Do we step up? Are we going to allow the Jewish people to be splintered and to be fractioned and to be divisive? Or are we going to say, no, I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to take that step forward. Because I believe that if we want to understand the ultimate core of the tragedy of the Jewish people for thousands of years, is the failure of Vayigash. It is the failure to truly take that step forward and take responsibility, see a potential situation and almost a failure of leadership and try to fill that void. And by the way, this could work on, I'm not saying it has to be on an international, national level, but even on a personal level, on a personal, individual level. When we see people, who in other people are not taking responsibility or not thinking about the other individuals, not thinking about the Yosef in their lives, the Yosef that is out there in the world, but instead allowing the Yosefs to be sold or to be left in a pit, we need those Yehudas. We need those people who are willing to be Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Vayigshu, to step up. I believe that is what everybody and anybody can do in almost any situation they find themselves. They have an ability to take that Vayigash, take that step forward. And so while we are literally just, unfortunately, it looks like it's going to happen this year, we're just a couple of days away from the beginning of the 3 weeks. I think if we can consider this notion of Vayigash, of taking that step forward, I think we could truly save and ensure that the bonds that exist between people, between families, between tribes, between Am Yisrael, can still be forged and still be connected or reconnected and soldered back together to ensure we don't have to all become best friends. We don't all, but everybody has a place. Everybody has an ability to truly be connected. And that is our job and that is responsibility. And I think that's the message as before we enter into this difficult time for the Jewish people. Have a, what is it today? Monday. A meaningful, marvelous Monday, and if you're outside, don't forget to drink. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.